Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Here Now. We are turning towards life. This is Lizzie and Justin on a Sunday morning. And we have a beautiful source this week for our unrehearsed live conversation and reflections on whatever our source is for the week. And we are very, very grateful to be here as always. And welcome to you whenever you're listening. Welcome to you wherever you are. You might be walking the dog or driving along or sitting quietly or in bed on a Sunday morning. Or maybe it's an afternoon or an evening where you are. We want you to feel very much included in this. That what I've realized, I was talking to somebody yesterday and realized that even though it seems like we're having a conversation with each other, it's also true that whoever you are listening, you are also in the conversation with us. And it might be that you're not getting to say words in this moment, but that the nature of the conversations means that we're all in conversation with each other. And I feel very, very grateful to that and to know that you're all there and that we are in conversation, a great big conversation, actually. Because sometimes sitting here, it can feel like it's just us, but of course, it's really, really not. And every time I talk to somebody who listens, I realize that more deeply. And I'm very grateful for every time we hear from somebody that says, I'm with you on a Sunday morning. This is what I thought. This is what I felt. This is what's happening. It's a confirmation that it's one big, grand, huge conversation with many, many people. So thank you for being in it with us.
I'm just rearranging windows here on my screen so that I can see you properly, Lizzie. And then I feel like I can speak when I've done that. Yeah, well, good morning to everyone. I too have this feeling, Lizzie, I'm so glad you said it that way, of being part of a conversation with many, many people when we do this. And it's been striking me something of the sort of fractal nature of this project, which is that we bring a source and the source sort of unfolds itself between us. But then the source and our conversation is unfolding itself in the minds and hearts and conversations of many other people. So for any and all of you who are listening and engaging with this, by the time this conversation reaches you, it's unfolded into something new that we can never know fully either from here. Like we're just the beginning of something. So it's always wonderful to hear what you have on your minds and in your hearts. And one way you can do that if you're joining us is to join our Facebook group. If you're someone who is willing to use Facebook, we have a Facebook group called Turning Towards Life, and it's a private members group, so it's not what you say there isn't publicly available. You can ask us to join, and then you can talk with us and with other people there, and it's a lovely thing that happens there. As very often, the source that we have for this week came to us from someone in our wider Third Space community, so I'm very grateful to have had this brought our way. And you can find the source on the Facebook group. We also always post it with the podcast and with the video of this conversation that goes on our little micro website, turningtowards.life. And it's by Albert Camus. And I think it's from his book, The Stranger. And as usual, we're both going to read it and then we're going to talk about it. And maybe the thing to do is, if you're right in the middle of something, if you're listening to this while busy in some way, or if just maybe you have a busy body or mind or heart, just take a moment before I read and then Lizzie's going to read. Take a moment to settle yourself and so that you can bring a particular kind of attention to these words. My dear, in the midst of hate, I found there was, within me, an invincible love. In the midst of tears, I found there was, within me, an invincible smile. In the midst of chaos, I found there was, within me, an invincible calm. I realized through it all that in the midst of winter, I found there was within me an invincible summer. And that makes me happy, for it says that no matter how hard the world pushes against me, within me, there's something stronger, something better, pushing right back. Truly yours, Albert Camus.
My dear, in the midst of hate, I found there was within me an invincible love. In the midst of tears, I found there was within me an invincible smile. In the midst of chaos, I found there was within me an invincible calm. I realized through it all that in the midst of winter, I found there was within me an invincible summer. And that makes me happy, for it says that no matter how hard the world pushes against me, within me, there's something stronger, something better, pushing right back. Truly yours, Albert Camus.
Of course, I think the thing that I love most about this is its hopefulness. And one of the things about Camus' hopefulness that I love here is not everything's going to be all right. So we've talked about this like a ton of times before, but there's a sort of a way that we can try and bolster ourselves up against our hurt or our pain or our wounds or our grief, which goes, no, everything's fine. I'm not feeling this. And that's not what this is. But it's a really strong counter, it seems to me, to the prevailing story that we have that so many of us, we're so steeped in, so many of us, which is there's no hope for me because I'm awful, I'm terrible, there's only darkness here. And the thing I love about this, Lizzie, is Camus doesn't say that there isn't darkness. He doesn't say we don't have fear, we don't have twists in us, we don't have times that we act against our own integrity, he's not saying any of that, but he's saying that right in the heart of us, if we'll look, there's something really, really good about being a human, that there's a basic goodness to us. And it seems to me, my experience of this is a big part of our work is finding it. So this seems to me to be the, you know, maybe this is the work of many years work for him to discover this. This wasn't something that comes easy to many of us, is to find that right in the time, in a way it was it's the first line that moves me the most, is maybe when we are most surrounded by the hate of others, but also maybe when we most find ourselves engulfed in our own hate, our own judgment, right then is the time that we might find that underneath that, in the heart of us, is something completely indestructible that can never be erased by whatever inner forces and outer forces is going on. And I know that when I touch into that, I can really easily be convinced by the left-hand side of this, of each of these pairs. I can fall into imagining that hate and tears and chaos and winter are either the main things that are true in the world or the main things that are true about me. But when I pay attention, and particularly when I get really quiet, and if I'm willing to love all of the things on the left that are inside me. So actually, I'm just realizing this by saying it. I hadn't realized this until I'm saying it, Lizzie. I'm not sure that it's just that I find it. It's not just that you sort of go burrowing and looking for it. I actually think that the way this works is something like, if I'm prepared to unconditionally, fully love what's here, particularly what's here in me, whatever it is, to smile at it, to bathe it in as much light as I can, genuinely, not to make it go away, but to love all of those parts of myself that I wrangle with, then I discover that what I'm made of is the right-hand side of every one of Camus' pairs. And then something much, much, much kinder and also much truer starts to become possible.
Yeah, it's really lovely to hear you say all of that. And I could just feel the truth of the right-hand side, you know, being what, in a way, what holds the left-hand side. So how love can hold hate. And I'm not sure hate can hold love, because I'm not sure that's what, you know, the agenda isn't big enough. And it feels true as well that calm can hold chaos, because the agenda feels bigger. And so feeling into the truth of us, the our nature, it feels like the large agenda of the truth of us is able to hold so much within it. And I also find these words by Camus are kind of a really beautiful acknowledgement of the parts of us where there might be all this stuff happening, but I still feel joy. And I know for me, like, I doubt myself. I think, well, maybe I shouldn't be feeling joy because it's so bad. Everything's so bad. There's so many things wrong. I shouldn't be joyful. But it's true that I feel a lot of joy in the midst of really difficult things. And so I also feel it's a welcome of the truth of us in spite of what's happening inside and outside, and an invitation to let that be okay. Like, we can feel joy even if things that are really difficult are occurring, and that's okay. We shouldn't feel bound to feeling misery because there's pain somewhere. And of course, how beautiful that we might feel compassion and we might feel connected to things, but our true nature is also allowed to be here. Our joy, our contentedness, our feeling like there's hope in the world is really okay and actually very necessary if we're going to find our way through lots of things. And actually, that's the other thing that I felt while you were reading, was the throughness of this. Like, I know in my life, when I have big experiences, big feelings that are dark or difficult or painful, I'm always convinced that it's going to have me, that this is it, that there's no way out and I'm going to die or something. Like, it feels so painful and physically painful often. Like, I don't think it's possible to separate emotional pain from physical pain, and it feels like there's always an embodied part of the hate, of the tears, of the chaos. And so our bodies being such an immediate experience that we have, it feels really huge. And I think this picture that Albert Camus paints is that there's a way through those things. Like, even if we can't see the love, can't see the smile or the calm, they're still there. And if we can make our way through and be present to, and like you said, welcome the part that's showing itself, that's pain or that's anger or heartbreak or whatever, the other side of that, the what happens when we get through that is that there is something else. It doesn't define everything, even though it feels like it does at the time. And there's also a necessariness to it feeling that way too, because it wants to be fully felt, not just kind of dappled with. But these things come to find us, I think. Our parts come to find us for us to turn towards them. And in the turning towards, something else becomes possible, that they don't have to dominate us. They don't have to become the most powerful source of action or internal feeling, they can be welcomed and let go too. Like they can wash through us rather than become us and the majority of our experience. So I really appreciate the invitation that pain's deep, but it's also possible that joy is even deeper, that the chaos is really deep and the calm is way deeper. So that there's a bigness here, there's a something holding everything, and that feels like who each of us actually are, and that we all have capacity for this.
So that's fabulous language. Lizzie, notice that it moves me greatly when you say there's a something holding everything, and that maybe what these words are an invitation to are to us, how it is that we find out that there's a something holding everything and that we are the something that holds everything. And I don't just mean we like on our own, I'm the one who has to hold all this hate and pain, tears and chaos. When we allow ourselves to drop down underneath it, we find that there's something about being a human that in a way isn't exactly personal. It's present in all of us, if we'll let ourselves find it, that is really, really wide and deep and loving and welcoming, and that's our inheritance. And in the way that you were saying it, I could hear that in a way what happens for us is that when a part of us that feels grief or feels hate or feels chaos comes up, we can identify with that as if that's me. This is all of me, is this super intense something, difficulty, maybe is one way of talking about it, that's going on. And in a way, that's a kind of forgetfulness of ourselves. Something amazing about Camus' writing here, it's very, very clear to me that this is exactly the opposite of positive thinking. In the midst of hate, I managed to get rid of my hate and find love. In the midst of tears, I got rid of it and found a smile. It's not covering anything up. It's more like going through. So there's a really big capital letters and in the middle of each of the lines of this, which is, I found that of me that maybe was hated by others, and I found that of me that maybe hates in return. And right in the midst of that, because I was willing to enter into it and feel it and experience it and not turn away from it, as I am sort of trying to interpret what Camus is saying here, we find that underneath it is invincible love. And right in the midst of our grief, we find the joy that is underneath it all, the joy that we're here at all. And that's one way into it. And another way into it, it seems to me, is a kind of remembering, what would it be to remember our capacity for joy when we're in the midst of grief? What would it be to remember our capacity to love when we're in the midst of hate? What would it be to remember the indestructible calm that we are in the midst of chaos? So it seems to me there's something both, there's a kind of grace in this, like when we allow ourselves for all of these to come forward to us, but there's also a kind of practice in it, if we choose, which is to bring to any experience we're having each of these qualities that's on the right hand side, to bring them alongside, so that hate can be held with love and tears can be held in a cradle of a deep and wide, deeper joyfulness that doesn't annihilate or nullify the tears, but cradles them in some way.
Yeah, I'm finding a kind of a narrative emerging for me, Justin, which is like when I find myself at the beginning of a cave, like a really dark cave, or I find myself right in it all of a sudden, is a way I can know it's a cave, and there will inevitably be some gifts in that cave, some jewels maybe that I get to take through to the other side, and I can walk through it and I can claim, even reclaim, and bring my love whilst in the cave to being in the cave, bring my faith, bring my trusting heart to welcoming in the gift of whatever is in the cave, and then I can emerge with the gifts that I receive from that cave still absolutely available to me once I am no longer right in the thick of the cave. And so if I can remember the caveness as I'm entering into it and not think that the whole world has gone dark, but that it's a cave, there's a boundary around it, it's doable, there's enough resource to be in the cave for a little while and experience what it is, but that I have faith that it's not forever and it's not everything, because it's a cave, it's a something rather than an everything. And the image that emerges for me is like a cave where when we get to shine light on the interior of a cave, and you then begin to look at really what the surfaces are made of and what they have, and many times there's jewels or some kind of beautiful carvings or different kind of rock, different kind of substances that are there, the rock is of different colours and beauty of some kind. But until we open our eyes to it, until we face into, turn towards what's here in the cave, we may never get to receive that beauty, especially if we completely avoid the cave forever and ever, because it feels too difficult. And I think in a way, Justin, that's part of our work in the world, is firstly being in the cave ourselves, and whatever caves come our way, we say yes to, and we have the faith, and we're held in our cave dwelling when it's happening, and encouraged to welcome caving, and then we can be that extension for others as well, that when you're in your cave, there's a tether between us, and I know that I'm not in the cave, and you know I'm not in the cave, but you can be in the cave because there's people who are outside of the cave, reminding you that the cave isn't everything. So I feel really glad for that, because it is so frightening when we feel alone and we feel like this is too much. And yet if we can make connection to and tether with people who are not currently in the cave or in a different kind of cave, even that's good enough, but just that we can have other people's perspective, other people's holding, that is a tether into the much larger agenda of the calm or the presence or the smile or the goodness that is also here. It just feels like it becomes possible to claim the gifts of all of our experience, not just the positive ones, not just the good ones, not just the things that where everything works out, but actually to follow the path of what our life gifts to us and to welcome it all.
I really love this metaphor of the cave, Lizzie, because the way I've got thinking about it whilst you were talking is when we're in the dark, when we feel trapped or constrained, what we might feel most of all is the darkness and the constraint. But to be in a cave, and I particularly love this because I feel so drawn to the ground and the underground, that when we're underground in something, what is all around us is solid ground. There's solid ground to the left and the right and above. And if we take it, such a good metaphor, because if we take the dark place that I'm in as when we take that to be the whole of everything, we forget that we're surrounded by something that holds us all the time, that this darkness is embedded in something way, 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 way bigger. That's quiet and holding and ever present. And that's why what you said about sometimes it's only when, there's two things. One is sometimes it's only when we find the wall of the cave and we get to see what it is that's holding us and how beautiful it is and how reliable it is, that we can only find out from being in the cave in the first place. And just to stretch the metaphor fully, the ground of the cave and the inside of the cave are us. So that's the mistake we make. We go, I am just this interior, this trapped interior. No, I'm also, and we are also way, way, way bigger than that. And I think that's where other people come in to this, in the way that you're saying, is to be accompanied by people like Camus, or by people who we love and we trust, who can say, I will come with you, I will accompany you, and I trust, like, the faithfulness of the people around us can enormously help us with our own faithfulness, and of course vice versa. And this is where you were talking about the kind of work that we do in the world, Lizzie. Our cultivating our own faithfulness is what enables each of us to be this for others, is to be people who will accompany patiently without trying to make everything okay, but at the same time holding firm that there is something, that there's a loving presence here to which it is worth being faithful, that can guide us through. And it's so hard often for us to do that on our own. I don't know who Albert Camus had around him in the difficult times that he's writing about, but we really can do it for one another. We can lend ourselves to one another in ways that makes this possible.
Look what you just said about lending ourselves to one another. It's funny. The other thing that pops up when you say that is how much we really belong to each other. And so, of course, I can lend myself to you because I belong to you. You know, it's really possible as humans to do this. And it just feels so hopeful that that's possible, that that's what we're made for. We're made to lend ourselves towards one another and to be this for each other. And what comes to mind for me is remembering what Matthew was like when I gave birth to Vespa, and how because I was really in the cave, but I had like a tether out to him. And because he wasn't also in the cave, and he was really had faith in me being in the cave, he was like, well, this is the cave you need to be in. This is all okay. I knew it was okay that I was in the cave because of that very small but important tether that told me that someone was completely fine with me being in the cave. It was literally more than fine. It was excellent. So my experience of the going deep, deep, deep into the cave was made possible in terms of my really genuinely being there and letting it unfold and not resisting it, not pushing away, not wanting it to end. None of that was there because the tether was able to give me information, which was, it's okay. And so someone else's okayness that I can be tethered to whilst I'm in the midst of like, oh my God, I have no idea what this is. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening. This is not my experience ever before in my life. All of that stuff. It was all held in a way that that made it just absolutely perfect that I was in the cave, without which there would be no orientation, there would be no reassurance, there would be no safety. And so I'm just really grateful that humans do this for each other. Like, we're made for this.
That's such fabulous language, that we're made for this, Lizzie, that we're made to be this for one another. And we forget, of course, and I think we forget because we get afraid. Mm-hmm. And then we forget to be this way for one another. I'm sure I've said this before here. I know I've said this to you many times, but in one of the darkest times in my life, about 15 years ago, when I felt the walls of the cave closing in and thought that the only thing, that everything about me was broken and all I had to do was to just hold it all together, Davina brought me a cup of tea one day and said something really simple, which is, she said, do you know how unhappy you are? Not, do you know how unhappy you are? Just snap out of it. And not, do you know how unhappy you are? Fix it up. And not, let's just pretend everything's fine. And not, there's something wrong with you. But simply, I see you and I'm here. And that, you use this word antenna, but I think earlier on you talked about, I don't know if you said this, but I was thinking about if you go caving, the kind of ropes and cords that we have that join ourselves to one another and that sort of keep us connected, to have someone say, here's a line, I can see where you are, I am connected to you. Not so that I can haul you out, because we can't, but so you can feel my presence. That, I love the idea that that's what we're made for. And I think that that's not just fanciful way of speaking. I think that's a real, given everything about how we humans come into being, that the completely radically social, we are made of, from the bodies of other humans, we become human in company, we learn how to be ourselves because we're with others. Everything we do shapes one another. We feel the feelings of one another. We are always indivisibly connected to one another. And we forget all of that. And we forget that we're made to belong to one another. It's really powerful. And I guess that that's what Camus is also discovering, that no matter what the world does, there's something with, I would sort of rephrase him as our way of closing for today, that no matter how hard the world pushes against us, within us, there's something stronger. There's something that can respond, and we can lend it to one another, and we can bring it to one another, and we can hold one another in that way. That's a really wonderful thing to remember about ourselves.
It's very wonderful, and I'm so grateful to be in the depth of contact with it right now. It's very beautiful. Thank you, Justin.
So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Lizzie, and thank you, everyone, for being with us. Again, this morning, we will be back, all being well, same time next week. And please feel so welcome to share this conversation and this whole bigger conversation with other people if you wish. There's room for everybody here, and we'll see you soon.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.